Yay, I did sign the disclosure, so good. Overall, our panel is actually aiming to tell you the story of what field-based courses are. We have been engaged in a lot of field-based courses across at Boston University School of Public Health, and so our goal is to tell you what it is, how they're done, some of the challenges, are we evaluating it, do we like it, we don't like it. So we're happy to share behind-the-scenes stories, but we'll quickly take you through the overview of what it is, and my task here is very, very simple. I'm just going to tell you what are field-based courses. And basically why they're important. And then I leave the hard task to Dr. Vian and Alexis. So before I begin, can I request you for 15 seconds, just 15 seconds. I think that's enough. What is your role as an educator? What do you want to do? Just think about it. Now, I won't put you on the spot, but if anybody volunteers, can you tell me what you're thinking of? What do you want to do? Yes. That's interesting. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, I can tell you my goal. It's very simple. I don't want students to seek enlightenment, and I'd love them to know more about beer. It may sound odd. Well, the story of enlightenment is I don't want students to be in my class seeking enlightenment where, you know, you get to know what you want, and then you sit in the class and say, I'd rather be on Facebook, I'd rather be outside. I want them engaged in the class, learning and seeking knowledge by being inside the class and not being like some of those yogis who sit for years and try to distinguish between soul and their body. So students can be physically present in the class, but in their mind, they could be outside somewhere. So that's my one goal. And the other goal is, I put the picture of beer. This is my story 15 years ago almost. Yes, exactly 15 years ago. When I was doing my MHA, my strategy management project was to look at beer across the world and look at whether Foster's beer really has a chance to compete globally. We were asked to interview people across the world. We met CEOs, and the project was one semester long, but I haven't forgotten a single model that we used. I haven't forgotten the engagement, and I still remember after 15 years what was the stock price of Foster's then and what's still happening with beer. So the idea here is that after 10 years, I still want students, and after 15 years, to remember the tools that were taught in the class. And that, as a goal for me as an educator, is a big goal. I don't want them to walk out of the class not knowing what they learned. I'm waiting 15 years hence to hear from them. I've been in this field for 5 years, so I have a long period to go. But I'm going to wait after 15 years and see what they've learned. Very often, this picture actually came up in New York Times a couple of weeks ago. If you've not read the article, highly recommend it. What we really tend to do is what I'm doing now, which is stand at a lectern and try to give them some visuals and try to put it in their ears. It's amazing how old this tradition has been and how scary it can be for a teacher. Every semester, the beginning of the semester, we can hear educators saying, I am worried the course is going to start. How can we deal through this? By probably using the old historical way of how Plato, Socrates taught, how in India there were gurus who used to teach. The idea of a guru is somebody who's going to shine a light on you and take away the bad light. We have been teaching for centuries, and we've been working through it in different forms. In one of the books, which I highly recommend, The Idea of a University, which was written in 1852, and it's available online, this kind of encompasses what we're looking for, which is we want to drill into their mind, we want to leave it with them, and we want to take it from there. There have been many theories about how we can take education to the next level. So there's been cult theory, which talks about active implementation, experimentation, using concrete experience, being reflective, and also conceptualizing. How can we bring these theories into the teaching environment that we all want to create? Bloom's taxonomy has been evolving, and we've heard about this for years, from 1956 to now. It's basically taking us from the level of just understanding and remembering to really creating and analyzing, reflecting, the highest level of education that every educator probably is aspiring for. So some of the words that are being thrown at us now, and I'm sure everybody's reading them either in the literature, in the media, or there are lots of similar words that are being thrown in the conference today. There's activity-based, there's practice-based, interprofessionalism. We want to do flip classes, and we also want to do field-based courses. So it is a distinction between lecturing, like what I'm doing now, as opposed to active-based learning, when you walk out of this session and probably remember what we've done by putting it into groups and engaging in activities which allow you to absorb the content and go through the details and really reflect and measure it and understand and analyze it. So we're promoting active-based learning. Now, active-based learning, in 2014, a meta-analysis was conducted, and it clearly showed that those who are introverts, those minority students, students who really struggle with learning outcomes, have actually seen benefits of this kind of learning. What's the difference between active-based learning and field-based learning? When we start putting students in teams, when we start engaging them in real projects with real clients, and when we put flip-style classroom, means it doesn't necessarily have to be videos outside. It's giving them the ownership to understand the readings that you're expecting them to bring into the class. When we're bringing in guest speakers and we put this together, we're really creating a field for them to go and play in. As somebody said it rightly, we're really sending them to harvest. So we're sowing the seeds and we're allowing them to harvest. So this is what we call a field-based learning course. What happens is we're enhancing the competencies, and of course if we enhance the competencies, we're going to also achieve skills and engagement. I know the next two guest speakers are actually going to talk about examples of this, as well as how we're evaluating this at BU. So I'm going to stop at this point with one riddle for you guys. There were four frogs who were sitting on a log, and one decided to jump. How many are left? I heard one. So there is a difference between deciding and doing something. It is difficult. Field-based courses are very easy to talk about, but they take a lot of strategy, a lot of effort, and a lot of student engagement, and of course faculty engagement. We'll talk more about this after we've heard from the rest of the panelists. Thank you.